started Yus Hashem, the third perek of Bava Kamma, Perek HaMeniach. And of course, we'll begin with the first Mishnah. Meniach es hakad b'rshus harabim. We now are shifting from our discussions about Shein, Regel, and Keren, the various ovos of a shor, of an animal. And now we want to shift our emphasis over to bor. And the case of bor, which is being addressed by our Mishnah, is the case of someone who left his utensils in the middle of the road, in Rishus HaRabim. Somebody comes along and is damaged by tripping over these kelim, or perhaps he himself damages the kelim. And the Mishnah establishes that HaMiriach HaSakad Rishus HaRabim First of all, in the case of a niskal, he tripped and broke inadvertently these kelim. He doesn't have to pay damages for the kelim. And that's really a chiddush in Adam HaMazik. Because you would think that Adam HaMazik is chayev, bein b'mezid, bein b'shogeg. And therefore here, if he's responsible for destroying the kelim, he should pay. But he doesn't pay, and the Gemara is going to have to deal with it. V'im huzak ba, but now the case of the person who tripped on these kelim rishus harabim, he himself was victimized, he was damaged, and he's hurting. He's called the nitkal v'niftza. His balachov is chayav v'nizko. Now the owner of this utensil, again, notice, as the Gemara is going to point out, it's no longer being called a kad, it's being called a chavis, but be that as it may, the owner of the utensil has to pay tashlumin, because anyone who puts a stumbling block, a takolin, which is a rabim, it's like he dug a bar, and he has to pay tashlume nezek. Even though we're going to learn on daf chav ches, that a person is not chayev finizke adam in a bar. That's based on the pasuk v'nafal shama shar o chamor shar v'lo adam. Nevertheless, that's only with regard to the misa of an adam. If a person fell into a bar and he died, then we alleviate the payments of the owner of the bar. But if in a case of nifta v'lo meis, if the victim was injured but he didn't die, then the one who created that bar has to pay his damages. The Gemara right away asks the obvious question, Posach b'kad v'siyim b'chavis. The Mishnah speaks about meniach sakad v'shus rabim. Then it finishes up by saying, balachavis chayav. Now, in general, we assume that these are two utensils. A kad is, generally speaking, a small utensil, a jug or a jar. A chavis is a barrel. It's a major, major kind of utensil. So what's the switch over here? The Gemara now quotes other Mishnais where we find a similar kind of a switch. Tna Nami, later on in Daf Lamed Aleph on base, we have a Mishnah, Zeba b'chaviso, v'zeba b'koroso. We have two people who are going on the way. One is carrying a chavis, a barrel. The other is carrying a beam, which is now horizontal, and they bang into each other. And as a result, the Mishnah says, V'nishbara, kado shel zeh b'koroso shel zeh. All of a sudden, the chavis became a kad, potter. Now, since the owner of the chavis slash kad was moving, and he really smacked into the korah of his friend, the korah of the mazik, so to speak, is therefore the balak korah doesn't have to pay damage. But once again, the same repetitive linguistic switch here, posach b'chavis v'siyim b'kad. He begins with a chavis and finishes with a kad. Tanan, we have another example. This is a Mishnah at the end of Bava Kamma, Kuftes Vav, Zeba b'chaviso shel yayin, Zeba b'kado shel dvash. Two people are on the way. One is carrying a chavis of yayin. The other one is carrying a jar of honey. Nistika chavis shel dvash. If there was a crack in the chavis of dvash. Again, we just finished saying that it's a kad of dvash. Now it became a chavis of dvash. And now what's happening is, as a result of this crack in the jar or in the barrel, the honey is about to spill out into the shisram and it'll be completely lost. The owner of the yayin, of the chavis of yayin, is very magnanimous. Shafach zeh. He wants to save the dvash. So he pours out wine. Yeno. Vehitzel es hadvash l'socho. And he saves the other person's dvash by collecting it before it hits the ground into his chavis. And now he'd like to ask the Baal HaDvash to pay him at least for the yayin that he lost in order to save his dvash. Is ein lo ela schara. The Mishnah establishes that the owner of the yayin does not have the ability to sue and force the Baal HaDvash to pay him and compensate him for his lost yayin, but rather he takes money. How much would you pay a poel, a worker, to do this tircha for you to save the dvash, whatever physical effort was expended in order to save the dvash? But again, pasach pekad v'siyim b'chavis. The same question repeats itself in a very systematic way. Om Rav Papa, hainu kad, hainu chavis. In fact, in the language of the Tana, there's no difference between a kad and a chavis. Sometimes the word chavis is used to indicate a great large barrel, and sometimes it's called a kad. Sometimes a small kad, a small jar, a humble little jar, is called a chavis. And therefore the Tana, the Mishnayis, is not careful to use one language or the other. And therefore the Mishnah sometimes goes out of its way to use these words interchangeably in the same Mishnah to indicate that they both really mean the same thing. L'maynaf gemina. Why is it so important to know this? That, you know, sometimes a person calls something a kad and it's called in the language of the Mishnah a chavis or vice versa. And the answer is there's a tremendous nafgemina legabi mekach umemkar. If, for example, we signed an agreement, a contract, that the sale is going to be of a chavis, and now the buyer has to pay the value, and yet the seller has not yet received the payment, the mocher has a right to say to the buyer, the seller could say to the buyer, you know what? I decided that instead of delivering a giant barrel to you, I'm going to give you a kad, a small jug or jar. Why? Because even though we signed a contract on a chavis, the word chavis means the same as a kad, and therefore I have the right to say and claim that I sold you a kad. Well, wait a minute. There's some piece of the puzzle that's missing here. What exactly was the scenario of the case? Hechidome. Ilema viastra de kado lo koru chavis v'chavis lo kado kad. If in that place, in that locale, people, when they use the word chavis, they mean a chavis. When they use the word kad, they mean something entirely different. Chavis is a kli gadol and kad is a kli katan. How could the mocher now say that after he agreed to sell him a chavis, he's going to deliver him a kad holo karole? In that place, they don't call a kad a chavis. A chavis is a chavis. Lo tzricha, the answer has to be deruba karole kad, kada, v'chavita chavita. Even though the majority of the people distinguish between a kad and a chavis, meaning that it has two different meanings, but ikonami the karu, we'll call it the silent minority, the karu lechavita kada, ulekada chavita, they use these terms interchangeable. Now, what obligates the mocher? Is the mocher confined by the majority? Ma'u de tema, I would say zil basa ruba. And since, in most cases, when a person uses the term chavis, he means a chavis to the exclusion of a kad, and that's going to engender an obligation on the mocher to deliver a chavis gedola, because the agreement, the contract, was signed on a chavis. That's what I would have said. The Mishnah wants to tell me no. Kamash malon, that even though it's only the minority of people in that locale who would use these two terms interchangeable, and perhaps the word chavis means a kad, we can, or the mocher can, base himself and rely stand on the shoulders of the minority, of the miut. And why is that? The ein holchim b'mamon achar rov. Even though rov is a very powerful tool and determines many, many different halachas throughout the universe of halacha, but not with regard to the area of mamonos. With regard to mamonos, the mocher has a right to claim that he belongs to the miut, and when he used the term chavis, he really had in mind a kad. He never had in mind the intention to sell anything but a small jar, and the majority cannot force their weight onto the minority. That's how Rashi interprets this sugya. Now, in a case, for example, where a person sells an ox, a shor, to his friend, and it turns out that this ox is a naghon, it's a belligerent shor, which means that the shor is only worth as much as its meat, the meat of its body, sold in the market. You have to shecht it, because the mocher has a right to say to the lokech, you know what? What I sold you is not the kind of ox that you want to work with, because it's a very dangerous animal, but rather I sold it to you for the purpose of its meat. I, the buyer, says, he counts it, he says, wait a minute, I want out of this sale, because most people, when they buy a shor, and I fit into the majority, want it for the purpose of a work animal, not for the purpose of slaughtering. Nevertheless, the mocher could say, well, okay, that's true for most of the people, but there is a silent minority that would buy a shor for the purpose of its meat, to be shechted, and that's what I sold you, and that's included in the contractual agreement. You have no right to back out of the deal. In fact, this all depends upon a machlokas Rav and Shmuel in the sugya later on in Mem Vav, which we didn't get to yet. And Shmuel says, in the case where a person sold a shor, nimtza nagchon, it turned out to be a nagchon, is ein olchim mamonach harov, and the sale is valid. Rav disagrees with him, and he wants to rely on rov. Most people buy a shor for purpose of harish, of working with it, and the mekach therefore is completely null and void. Rashi here in our sugya seems to accept and reflect the sheet of Shmuel against Rav. And the Achronim talk about this. Tosfos here, back on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, Dibur Masechta Meniach, writes that even Rav, who says that holchim b'mamon achar rov, he would admit that in our sugya, where the mocher sold a chavis to his friend, he has rights to supply his friend with a small kad, even though rov people, when they buy a chavis, they mean a chavis gedola. The mocher has a right to say that I belong to the silent minority. And the word chavis is interchangeable with the word kad. That's not a contradiction to Rav's principle in the case of a person who sold a shor. There, we're not interested in the das of the mocher. The focus is on the das of the kohen, of the buyer. The mocher doesn't have the rights to say, you know what? I know that you had in mind to buy a shor for shechita. On the contrary, the lokech could say that I know that I had in mind to purchase a shor for harisha, and al das kein, I purchased this shor not for shechita, but rather for harisha. On Amud Beis, Tosfos, Dibur HaMaskil Kamashmal, asks, why shouldn't we use the principle of rov, for lion rov, in Mamonos, to the same extent we rely on rov in Kolotar Kula? Even in Dini Nefashos, we go Basar Rov. For example, in a trial, in a cardinal sin of capital punishment, we count up the judges, that's called Amida L'Minyan, and with Machriel Pi Rov, we can put a person to death based on a Rov, Rov Dayanit. How much more so in Dini Mamonos, which is relatively lenient, Kal, we should rely on Rov. And Tosfos answers that in Dayanim there's a special halacha of Rov, because the miut is Kemisha Eino. We rely on the Rov, and the minority view is completely null and void. Even the minority view has to kowtow to the majority rule. That's called Achrei Rabim Lahatos. In the case of Mammon, we have a principle called Hamed Mammon Al Cheskoso, that until you have proof positive to be motzi from a chazaka, and Rov is not strong enough to be motzi Mammon from Cheskoso, is Ein Holchem Mammon Achar Rov. So if the Lokech now wants to force the hand of the Mocher to produce and transfer a Chavis Gdola, he's a Motzi Mechaveil of Araya, and Rov is not enough of Araya. The Mishnah says that after a person, we'll call him Ruvain, puts his Kad, or his Chavis, down in Rishus HaRabim, Uba Acher V'Niskal Ba Ushvara Potter, the Niskal doesn't have to pay. In fact, the Gemara, my Potter, why doesn't he have to pay damages when he breaks the kad, when Shimon breaks the kad of Reuven? Iboile liyuni umezil, a person should be mizbonein bidrachim, he should be careful about the way he walks, look down at the floor, and if he fails to do so, and he smashes into a kli, he should be responsible to pay for it. And truth be told, the Gemara could have asked a more fundamental question, and that is, why should the owner of the utensil be chayav, as the Mishnah formulates it, to pay damages if the nitkal is injured, and that's what we call bar? After all, it's the nitkal's fault because he was negligent in being careful the way he walks. It seems that, as Tosis points out, the Gemara was pshitale, it was certain that a person should be more careful not to damage someone than not to be damaged. And therefore, even if we assume a person who's walking is chayav lizbonei bidrachim in order not to damage, nevertheless, he doesn't require that level of his bonenus to make sure that he's not damaged, and therefore if he is damaged, the owner of the chavis has to pay damages. The Rashba disagrees. He is of the opinion that the Gemara is going to ask really two questions. One is explicit, one is implicit. That if the walker is obligated to be careful about the way he walks, then on the one hand he should be chayv to pay damages if he breaks the kli, and on the other hand, the owner of the kli should be potter from tashlimei nezek of the nizkal. The Gemara is going to ask one question explicitly, and then the other question maybe down the line, but it's a two-sided coin. That's the Rashba. Ami de Bei Rav, Mishmei de Rav, a statement in the name of Rav, Bimimale Rishus HaRabim Kula Bechavis. Enochinami, there is a certain element of negligence if a person's not watching the way he walks, but this is a unique case. The owner of the Chavis filled up the entire Rishus HaRabim, again, vertically horizontally in one direction, in such a way that it's impossible to pass without going, you know, without colliding with the kli. And in that case, we understand very well that the person who walks is not going to be chayev when he damages the kli. In other words, the owner of the chavis really overstepped his bounds here to a very severe sense, to expect that the walker would be so careful that even if the whole Rosh Hashanah straight across is blocked by these kalim, that he should still be careful and not be mazik. That's very difficult. Now, the problem here is that the walker should really see, he's not blind, that the entire Rosh Hashanah is covered with chavios, and he should therefore jump over the kalim. And perhaps what Rav is saying, that of an inish dina l'nafshi in this case, that the person who's passing through the street has a legal right to deliberately break the kli in order to get past it. And for sure, if he breaks it b'shogeg, inadvertently, without a deliberate intention, he certainly is potter. And this is an analysis of the Nachlas David we mentioned before, the Rashiva from Valozhin. At the end, he rejects this, and he wants to explain that if the Rosh Hashanah is completely covered with chavios, a person is not able to be careful to pass over without breaking any of the chavis, and therefore he's potter. But it doesn't mean that he has rights to deliberately break any of the kelim through ovid inish dini l'nafshe. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel is a different way of interpreting our Mishnah. About Fela Shanu, we're talking after nightfall. And therefore, even though a person who's walking with Shadab should be careful in the way he walks and look at the floor, but nevertheless, if it's dark out and there's no lighting, we can't expect him to be careful and not to break kelim that are illegitimately left in the Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, he's not obligated to pay damages. Rabbi Yochanan bar Karen Zovis, another possible scenario here with the holech is not poshea, is in a keren zovis, which means a corner. In other words, two roads intersect in a T, in a 90 degree angle, and the person who turns from one road to the other, he doesn't have a chance to look and see, wait, look where there's a chavis placed exactly at that point in which he turns his way. In other words, he can see in front of him, but he doesn't see what's on the side on the other road, and therefore he's potter. Omar Rav Papa, now we want to see how the language of the Mishnah fits in, according to Shmuel, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Omar Rav Papa, lo daika masnisin, ela o kishmuel, O Kirab Yochanan, the two ukimtos, respectively, that of Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, fit beautifully into the language of the Mishnah. Dikir Rav, but if we can assume like Rav that the owner of the chavis filled up the entire width of the Rishus HaRabim with chavios, is my Irian Niskal afilu shavar nami. And this comes back to what we discussed earlier. The Mishnah formulates a case where the mazik, meaning the walker, was a nitkal. Nitkal means he hit up against the chavis and inadvertently broke it. What about shavar? What if he did it intentionally? That too should engender a ptur, because if it was impossible to pass from one side of the Rishus HaRabim to the other without breaking one of the kelim, then the walker is allowed to deliberately break one of the kelim in a direct way. So why did the Mishnah mention less of a chiddush here of nitkal? I mean, according to Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan, we're dealing with a case of nitkal, but according to Rav, we should extend this even to the case of Shiber, meaning he deliberately broke the kli. Omar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derova, that's not a proper diuk, because Enoch Inami, you're right, Hu Adin Afilu Shavar, even that he deliberately broke in the kli, according to Rav Zukimti, would be potter, but Hai the Ketani Nitkal is a technical, symmetrical reason, the Aidi Ketani that we usually use. That's why the Mishnah mentions Nitkal, because Aidi the boy Lemisne Seifa. The Mishnah wants to maintain a certain symmetrical form for both Reish and Sefer, and the Sefer talks about him, Huzak Ba, the Balachavis is Chayav Benizko, the one who placed the utensil has to pay for any damages incurred by the Nitkal, the Dafka Nitkal, Aval Shavar Lo, meaning if the Mazik takes the law into his own hands, and in order to get by from one side of the Rishus HaRabim to the other in crossing these chavios, he broke deliberately the chavis, then the sefer would be out of place, because my time of Hudiyazik Anafshe, the Bala chavis doesn't have to pay damages when the mazik, who now becomes a nizak in the sefer, deliberately decided to take the law in his own hands. You know, he has to do it in a way that he protects himself. Obviously, he can break the keli, the chavis, but he doesn't have to hurt himself. Is ketani bereisha nitkal? So for technical reasons, the Mishnah, to be consistent, uses the word nitkal even in the reisha, when really, in effect, the halacha applies even in shiber. Now the Gemara offers another explanation as to why the nitkal is patur. And this is I should say, all the three explanations that we had until now, the three ukimtos stand on one side of the scale, and now we have a minority view that's antithetical to the premise of all three. Omalei Rav Abba, Rav Ashi, Ochi Amri B'marova, Mishmeidu Rabbi Ula, a statement that we heard in Eretz Yisrael, the name of Rav Ula, the reason why the Nitkal is not Chayev, even though Lechora he should have been careful before he broke someone else's keli, Rishon Lefisha Ein Darkon Shel B'nei Adam Lisbonin B'drachim. I reject the entire premise that you've been operating with. You're assuming that the Nitkal is a Poshea, but the answer is no, he's not a Poshea. When a person walks, even in the middle of the day, we don't expect him, and he's not required to look carefully at the ground and see what's there below him. And even if the Chavis was smack in the middle of Shas Rabim during the daylight, it's not like Shmuel, not like Rabbi Yochanan, he'd be Potter. In other words, it comes out here that there's a fundamental machlokas amoroyim as to whether or not there's an obligation incumbent upon a person to be careful when he walks. According to Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, a person has to be mizbone and bedruch to make sure he doesn't injure anybody. And therefore, nitkal would be chayev unless there are extenuating circumstances like moli chavios or bafelo or keren zavis. But according to Rabbi Ula, ein adam chayev lizbonim bedarko. And if he's potter in all these cases, in all cases, I should say, not these cases. Havi uvda ben arda, there was a case of a person who was nitkal, and he destroyed, as he was walking, some object which was a rabbim. This happened in Narda. V'chiyev Shmuel. Shmuel said he has to pay damages. There was a case of a ma'isa from Padisa, v'chiyev Rava. And everybody understands Shmuel over here, that he was Machayev, and Bishleim Shmuel Kishmaite, because Shmuel holds that a person is obligated to be Mizbonin, and he's Chayev, unless it's a Afela, but in during the day, he's Chayev for damaging someone's keli. But El Rava, in the case of Rava, we don't have any commitment on the part of Rava to accept the principle of Shmuel, Lema Kishmuel Svirlei. L'chora, we're going to have to assume that Rava accepted the principle of Shmuel, which was also accepted, as we saw before, by Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, namely, that a person, a walker, is responsible to be meticulous about the way he walks, and he'll pay damages if he damages. On Rav Papa, no, you know what, there's no proof. Perhaps the story of Rava, the scenario there, was a different one. Namely, Karna di Atzra Havi. What happened in that Maisa that Rava Paskins that Yechayev? It was an Adam, Sheiniach Kalev, a person left his Kalim, be Karna di Atzra, which in Hebrew means Pinat HaRachov. What does it mean? There is a concept or an entity called a Beis Habad. Beis Habad is a place where they take the olives, and in order to remove the oil from the olives, they do what's called Ketisha. They grind the olives down in a place called a Beis Habad. That's a giant stone that they turn around over the olives, and what comes out is the oil. And the minhag was that at the time the Beis Habad was full with many people, because many people were working there, then anyone who came afterwards would put down their kelim next to the Beis Habad, and kevin d'rishus, v'rishus ka'avdi, boi le'ilinu mezal. If a person is walking in this place called the Karna di Atzra, where he knows that you are allowed to put down your kelim in a certain designated area that's contiguous to the Beis Habad, in that case, there's a special chiyuv that a person walking there should make sure that he doesn't damage the kelim that he knows he anticipates will be there. That's why Rava said he's chayev. But as a universal rule, Rava can accept the opinion of Ula that ain't darkon shel b'nei adam lizbonin b'drachim. A person's not responsible to look in the way he walks and make sure that he doesn't damage anything on the ground. Now, before we discuss the case of Rav, or the scenario of Rav, in which a person fills up the entire Shazaram with his barrels or with his jars, and now we're saying that a person who passes by has the legal right to break the Chavis in order to pass, and that is even deliberately. That's based on a principle of Ovid Inish Dini L'Nafshe, that a person can take the laws into his own hands. Normally, of course, you cannot, there's no legitimacy, there's no license to break someone's keli, but here in this case, because of his rights to pass through Rishus HaRabim, he has a legal right to take the law into his own hands and destroy someone else's keli. Yisholach Rav Chisda Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman raised this question. Rav Chisda raised this question to Rav Nachman. Hare Amru, the Chachamim say l'rekuva shalosh, ulebeita chamesh, v'lis nokeres shloshes rei, and lefanda demora ulekapita demora mai. What happens if a person kicks someone else, Lirkuva? In the first case, he kicked him in his shin, or in his knee. And we're talking about boshes here. The chiyuv is to pay shalosh. Shalosh means three sloim, and that's the classical standard amount of boshes that you have to pay because you humiliated a person by kicking him. Lebi'ita, if he takes the bottom of his foot, which is called the kaf haregel, and he kicks someone, that's even a greater embarrassment, he pays five slime. In the case where he hits him over the head with the saddle of the donkey, that's an even greater embarrassment, he pays 13 slime. These are all payments that a person incurs for embarrassing someone, and that's called boshes. However, in the case of panda demora, lekupina demora, how much do you pay? Let's say he takes a shovel and he hits the person with the bottom of the shovel, or he hits the iron part of the shovel, or a hoe, for example, or he hits him with the wood of the shovel. How much do you pay for that? Shalach lei. And Rav Nachman returned the answer to Rav Chisda. Chisda, Chisda, what are you asking these questions? Knasa kamagbis bebovel. Are you collecting a knas in bovel? Boshes is called a knas. What do we mean by knas? Knas means that you're paying and compensating a person when there's no real compensation, meaning you're not compensating for a loss of mama. Boshes is not something that is, is a deficit from a person's bank account. His bank account didn't go down by any grush. And therefore this is called a knas. And the halacha is that we only collect a knas in Eretz Yisrael, but not in Bavel. We're here in Bavel. How can you force anyone to pay a tashlume boshes, which is a knas? But in any event, tell me exactly what happened. What does it mean he hit someone with a shovel or with a hoe? Sholach Rav Chisda returned and replied with Rav Nachman. This was what the Maisa was. Tahu Gargusa Devetre. There was an underground water storage place, and it belonged to two people in partnership. Kol yoma havidoli chad binayu. There was an agreement that you, one partner, will use this bar to take your water up from the bar on a particular day. And osak chad kadoli biyoma delo diday. And the other partner usurped the rights of the first partner, and he started taking out water with his barrel from the bar on the other one's day. Omole, so the one who's being embezzled here says, Yomadidi, it's my day. Lo ashkechbe. And he continued to draw the water from the bar. Now in those days, water from a cistern is worth a lot of money. Shakal panda demora machaye. What did he do in order to stop this situation? He took the handle of this shovel and he hit him over the head with it in order to make him stop drawing water from the cistern. And therefore, I would like to know how much does he have to pay his friend for the Mei Boshes? Amalei, Mea Fandi Befandi Lemichia. He should have taken a hundred handles and hit him over the head. He doesn't have to pay him anything. After all, his friend is stealing his water. Afilu man di omer lo ovid inish din lenafshu. We're going to have a machlokus later on whether a person has the right to injure someone and take the law to his own hands in order to prevent himself from taking a loss. That's only b'makom shelekap seida, where he could easily have waited and taken the guy to Bezdin. But b'makom seida ovid inish din lenafshu. Everybody agrees that if he waits to take him to Bezdin, he's going to suffer an immediate financial loss. He's allowed to take the law into his own hands. And here, that the person is taking the water out, he doesn't want to lose that water. He has a right, since he's the party that owns the rights to the water today, to beat up his friend, to do whatever he has to do to prevent him from emptying the bar of its water. And therefore, he doesn't have to pay any damages, even if we would go over Knas B'Bovel. And on this issue of Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshei, the Gemara now quotes a machlokes Amoraim. To Itmar, we learned in our base medrash, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshei, a person does not have a right, even though he has a claim against his friend, to take the law into his own hands. He's got to bring him to Beis Din. Rav Nachman Amar Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshei, a person has a right to implement the law on his own and do a din in order to prevent and protect his rights. And the Gemara explains that Hechadika Pseida, in a situation which is urgent, and Ruven is going to take a loss if he doesn't take the law into his own hands, Kuliamalo Pligi, even Rav Yehuda would agree that of it Inish Dina L'Nafshe, no argument. Ki plea, they only argue Hechad Lekab Seida. Right now, there's no immediate loss. Rabbi Yudom, our law of it, Inish Dil Nafshe, came to Lekab Seida, Lazel Kami Dayona. You're not going to suffer any financial loss. Take him to Bezdin. That's Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov. Bezdin is in charge of justice. And you'll be reimbursed based on the evidence that you can adduce in Bezdin. Rav Nachman Omar, of it, Inish Dil Nafshe. Even though it's not a makom seida, he could take the law into his own hands. He doesn't want to go to Bezdin. The kaveh the bedin of it, he's really doing what he has to do in order to protect his monetary rights, is lo tarach. He doesn't want to have the whole hassle of suffering a loss and then taking him to Bezdin. Even though, again, in Bezdin he'll retrieve exactly the money that was taken away from him. He doesn't have to do that. Is Ovid Inish Dina L'Nafshe. He becomes, so to speak, a substitute for Bezdin, and he has the right to paskin the law and prevent and protect his legal rights. One of the Achronim, Yosef Engel, asks a very interesting kash I wanted to mention here in passing. How could Rabbi Yehuda maintain that Ein Adam Rashoy, a person's not allowed, Ein Adam Ovid Inish Nilo, Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshe, he can't beat up a person in order to protect his interest? The Gemara says later on Daf Chav Ches, that there's a case of an Eved who was freed by his Adon, which means he can no longer live with a Shivcha. And if the Eved lingers around and he refuses to leave premises, then the owner of the Eved who just freed his Eved is allowed to beat him up in order to prevent him from Lafrisho Misa Shivcha. Then Rabbi Yehuda should admit that if somebody is stealing my mama and I have a right to beat him up in order to be mafreshim from an Isa Gezel. And basically what Rabbi Yosef Engel wants to mechadish is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a person who can be toveah, who can sue a gazlan in Bezdin and get back his money, has to be mochel on his mama as far as the Isa Gezel is concerned. In other words, there's a partial Mechila here, only vis-a-vis the Averis Gezel, not vis-a-vis his monetary rights to claim and reclaim his mammon in Bezdin. Masiv Rav Kahan. Rav Kahan has an objection to Rabbi Yehuda from a Tosefta. Ben Bagbag Omer, Al Tikones Lechatzer Chaver Cholito Shel Choshelo Bershus Shemate Roy Olav Gazlan Kiganov El Shvores Shinov Emorlo Sholiani Lotel. A person doesn't have the right to enter into the private premises of his friend in order to retrieve that which is his. He doesn't have license. He was never given permission to enter into his friend's house. And he's going to look like a ganav if he does so. But what can he do is shvar eshinov, meaning
He kanes bechoska begolu v'yamarlo shali ani notel. He has a right to break into his friend and say, "Look, I'm not going to stealthily take what I know is mine and look like a ganav, but I'm going to tell you right now, I am going to take my object which you refuse to give me." And lechora, he could be toveyam in bezdin. It's not a makom hefseid, and yet Ben Bagbag maintains that he's allowed to do this. Certainly, this is a case of Ovid Inish Dinu Lenafshi. He just has to make sure that Shalo Teiro Alav Kaganov. Amalei, when Rav Kahana asked this question, Rav Yehuda responded to Rav Kahana, and here we're going to turn to Daf Chavches Omer Aleph. Imach, is this really a kasha? Ben Bagbag Ichidohu, Pligi Rabbanan Alei, don't ask me a question from the minority view of Ben Bagbag, because the Chachamim disagree with Ben Bagbag, and they maintain Einon Rashoi Lasus Dinli Atzmo, if there's no Hefseid, even if he declares openly that he's not a Ganav. Another answer, Rav Yana offers another answer, Omar, even if we accept Ben Bagbag, still, Ben Bagbag would agree that lo avid inish dina lenafshe shelo b'makom seder umay. And what does he mean when he says shvara shina bedin? He means not to break his teeth and break into his house to take that which is his, but bedin, that he has to be tovea the owner of the chotzer in bezdin. The Gemara says he hachi. If that be the case, that he has to be tovea in bezdin, why does the Rashi say emarlo? It should have said Omrim lo mi boile. It should have said that Bezdin should address the owner of the chatzah and say, "You better give it back." Why does the Braisa say Shali ani notel? Obviously, speaking about the owner, the nigzal of the object. Shalohu notel mi boile. It should have said that we tell him Shalohu notel, he's taking, or he will take that which is his. Kasha, and therefore the Gemara thinks that the teretz of Rav Yanai is a difficult one to accept because of the language of the Braisa, and we rather go back to the answer of Yehuda that we don't paskel like Ben Bagbag, but rather like the Chacham who disagree with Ben Bagbag. The Gemara now wants to bring another proof to establish that Ovid Inish Dina Lenafshi Shalom B'Makom Seida Tashma, we learned in the Braisa Shar Sha'ola Al Gabi Chaver Lahargo. One shar attacks another shar, and it's now riding on top of a shar. Babal Atachton, the owner of the shar that's now being victimized, he's on the bottom, of course, he's the Tachton. Vishamet es shalo, he has a right to remove his shar from underneath this big zlobi shar on top. And Nafal Elyonumes, as a result, removing the shar hatachton is going to cause the death of the shar elyon potter, and he doesn't have to pay damages. In other words, he was within his rights to remove his shar. And again, lechoritz lekap seidah, my lav bimuot, which means that the shar on top that's attacking the shar on the bottom is a shar muot, which means that if the nizak will sue for damages in a court of law, Lekup said he loses nothing, he'll be able to collect full damages, which means Nezek Sholim for Shar Muad Lo. The Gemara says, Bit Tam. The Bryce is talking about a case of a Shar Tam Dikup Seda, because unless he saves his Shar immediately, the bottom Shar, the owner of the top Shar will only have to pay Chatzi Nezek. So the Shar Hatachto will be lost, and his compensation will only be 50%. That's Makom Seda. Ihachi, if that's what the Bryce is talking about, a Shar Tam, Ema Seifa, how are you going to justify the Seifa? Because in the Seifa, we're going to see that if the Baal Shar Tachto does not remove his Shar from underneath the Shar Elyon, but rather, Dechofo Le Elyon, he goes and he pushes the Elyon off, and that's what kills the Shar HaElyon. Umeis is chayev. In such a case, the owner of the shar tachton has to pay nezikin for directly destroying the life of the Shor Elyon. This is again a case of Oven Inish Dinil and Afshim Makom Seder. Everybody agrees that in order to save his financial loss, he's allowed to do whatever he has to do. And the Gemara says, Hayolo l'shomto velo shmato. This is similar to the case of a Rodef, where you're only allowed to kill the Rodef, there's no other option. Here too, if the Shor Elyon is like a Rodef, and you have a right to destroy the Shor Elyon in order to save the Shor Tachton in the Makom Seder. However, if there were other options, and it was not absolutely necessary to kill the Shor Elyon in order to save the Shor Tachton, he could have just simply removed the Shor Tachton physically and let the Shor Elyon die, if it would die. His he did Shaloka Ogen, and therefore he's Chayiv in Tashlumei Nezek. The Morgan now tries to bring another rice to prove that Ovid Inish Dinil and Afshia Fil Shalom Makom Seder Toshma. We learned in a rice Hamemale Chotzer Chavero Kadayayin Vikadei Shemen. If Reuven goes into Shimon's Chotzer and he lines up an entire string of jars or barrels of Yayin or Shemen, wine or oil, Balachotzer, the Balachotzer has a right, Mishaber V'yotze, in order to get out of his chotzer, which is now completely blocked, he can break the kalim, these kadim of Yayin Hashemen. Mishaber V'nichnas, when he's on his way into his chotzer, he can break the kalim of the person who left his kalim there in such a way that he has no access to his house. We see that Adam Osed dinli atzma v'dinish dinli nafshe to break these kelim, even though it's not makom seder, it could be tovem in bezdin. Om Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak meshaber v'yotzi lebezdin meshaber v'nichnas lahavi zchuyosa v'enochinami. He's not allowed to break the kelim. That's not what the brisa really meant, but rather he is tovea, the owner of the kadim in bezdin. He forces him. He sues him in a court of law. And he goes in, what does it mean? Nichnas. Nichnas means he goes into his house to bring his proofs and to establish that the Balakadim had no right to put his Kadim there in his Chotzer. And if you'll take a look at Tosas, Divya Maskel, Meshabra V'yotze, you'll see that it's clear from Tosas that he understood that what's happening here is that the Baal HaKadim is claiming that this Chotzer belongs to him. And now the Baal HaChotzer wants to enter in to his Chotzer, to his house, in order to bring proof in front of that he can adduce in front of Bezdin with documents that testify to the fact that he owns the Chotzer. And at this point, Tosis learns that the Baal HaChotzer doesn't have to start piling up one card on top of the other in order to enter into his house to bring his proofs and in order to present his arguments to Bezdin. No, he could just break the kadim and go into his house. This is called the Makom Hefsed, because if he has no way of being Tovea and Bezdin at this and proving that this chotzer is in fact his, other than getting into the house and breaking the kelim, even though, again, he could be matriach himself, like in the case of the shor, where we required of him to remove the bottom shor rather than push off the top shor. But here, Tosas says, it's a case of atrichu. And this tircha is a major kind of a tircha to impose on him to start piling up kelim and kadim one on top of the other. In this case, it's considered makom seder in order to get access to his house, because otherwise he'll lose the court case. So whatever he has to do in order to win the court case, that's called makom seder. And if he has to break the kelim in order to do so, to have access to his proofs, his documents, that's called Ovid Inish Dinil and Afshim makom seder. Once again, the Gemara tries to quote a braisa that would prove that even if there's no makom seder, nevertheless, Ovid Inish Dinil Nafshe, Toshma Minayin Linirtza, we're talking about an Eved Ivri, who after 6 years, instead of going free, he decides to remain within the possession of the Adon, and for that he gets a Ritzia onto his ear, and he remains until Yovel in the Rishus of his Adon.
Shekalu lo yomav. Now we get to Yovel. And at this point, he should go home. He doesn't want to go home with Yovel. He wants to remain under the dominion of his Adon. Verabo, but his Adon, his master, Misarhev, Bo, Lot says, he's begging him to go free, and he's not willing to listen. V'chaval v'yosav o'chabura. So the master here, the Adon, took the law into his own hands, and he starts beating up the Eved Ivri, who refuses to go. And the Brisa asks, how do we know Shu Potter? He doesn't have to pay damages for assaulting the Eved. Talmud Lomar v'lo sikhu kofer. The Pasuk says in Bamidbar Lamed Hey, you should not take any redemption funds. Loshuv. And the end of the Pasuk is Losheves Ba'aretz. And the Rabbanan Darsh and Lo Sikhu Kofer Lishav, meaning don't take any Tashlum Mamon for an Eved Ivri that wants to come back and remain in the Rishus of the Adon, and remain in the Avod of the Adon. He doesn't want to go out for free. And in such a case, im chaval bo, if the Adon injures the Eved in order to get rid of him, he doesn't have to pay damages. And the reason for that is apparently because Adam, Ovid inish dino lenafshe, a person could do a din for himself, and if he was chovel in the Eved, he doesn't have to pay. Now, l'chora, this is shalom b'makom hefseid, because he can certainly invoke bezdin here. Why do you have to assault the Eved? Hachamayaskinon bi'avda ganva. This Eved has been accused and condemned in the past as a ganav. He steals things from the Adon. If we leave the Adon, or if we leave the Eved around, if he lingers around for another minute, who knows what he's going to steal? And therefore, Ovid inish dinu l'nafshi b'makom seida. The Gemara is not happy with this. Ado idnu lo ganav ash the ganav. He's been an Eved for more than 50 years to this Adon, and he didn't steal anything. The Adon didn't get rid of him as a ganav. Now all of a sudden he started stealing. The Gemara answers, Ado idnavi imse de Rabbi Ale. He was afraid of his Adon. He was meshubit his Adon. So he had a lot of awe and fear of the master. But Hashta, now it's after Yovel, and now he goes free. Lesle mosid de Rabbi Ale. Now he can be a meiz panav. Now he doesn't have to be worried about the Adon. He's a free agent, and he can steal whatever he wants. And he knows exactly where everything is because he's been serving him for so many decades. Therefore, the Adon has an urgent need to get rid of this guy as soon as possible, and he could take the law into his own hands, even if it means assaulting the Eved. The Gemara offers another rejection of this proof from the case of Eved. Rav Nachbar Yitzchak Omar, we mentioned this earlier, be Eved Shemosalo Rabo Shivcha Knainis. We're talking about a case of an Eved Ivri who's now has a relationship with the Shivcha Knanis, has an Eved Ivri he's allowed to. Ado Idna Hetera, up until Yovel. The Pasuk says, in Adon Yitin Lo Isha, the Eved Ivri is allowed to have this relationship with a Shivcha Knanis. But Hashta Isur, but now the moment of his Shichrur, which is a result of Yovel, if the Eved wants to linger on, he doesn't want to get, you know, he doesn't want to evacuate the premises of the Adon, it means he wants to remain with this relationship and continue his relationship with the Shivcha. Now the Adon has to be mafrish the Eved from Isur, and everybody would agree in such a case that he's allowed to beat him up in order to prevent him from this Avera of Kadesh, of having a relationship with a Shivcha Knanis when he's already an Eved Meshuchrar. The Gemara now wants to prove the exact opposite, that lo avid inish dina l'nafshe, and perhaps even v'makom seida, the other extreme, which we never even had this sheet. The Tashma, we learned in our Mishnah, haminich sakad v'shus harabim u'ba achar v'niskal ba u'shvara patur, meaning that the holech v'shus harabim accidentally, that's called niskal,
tripped and broke the kli, and therefore he's potter. Time of the niskal ba. The reason why he's potter is because he inadvertently broke the kli. Hashavar, if he deliberately broke it, chayv, he has to pay. And lechora, this is a case of ovid inish dinil anafshe, meaning, why does he have to pay if he deliberately breaks the kli? After all, since the Baal HaKadim had no right to spread out all his Kadim straight across the entire Rochav, the width of Rishus HaRabim, there's no more place here to pass by. So if you want to get from one side of the Kadim to the other side of the Rishus HaRabim, you have to break the Kadim. And he's chayav for breaking the kadim. It means lo avid inish dinil anafshi. And here it's a makom pseida because there's no other way of getting across. Om Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava hu adin dafilu shavra. This is a repeat of what we learned earlier. In truth, the Mishnah would say that he's potter even if he deliberately and intentionally breaks the kelim because avid inish dinil anafshi. Why does the Mishnah mention a lower case, a simpler case of Niskal that he's potter? Why not tell me the greater Chiddush that even if he broke the Kelim he's potter? The Mishnah wants to maintain the symmetry between the Reish and the Sefer, because in the Sefer Mehuzak, the Sefer wants to be Mechadish that if the Holech was injured by the Chavis, Bala Chavis Chayav Benisko, and that's only Dafka Beniskal, Aval Shiber, or Shavar, depending upon how you vocalize it, is low, the Bala Chavis doesn't have to pay for the Nizikin if the Nizak took the law in his own hands, deliberately stomped and broke the Kli, the Hu Azik and Afshe, he injured himself, is there for Ketoni Reisha Nami, Niskal, the Reisha falls into place. Tashma, the Gemara again wants to prove that Lo Avid Inish Dinil and Afshe, even Makom Seda, from a Braisa. Tashma, we learned in a Braisa based on the Pasuk. In Parashas Ki Teitze, it says there, with regard to a woman who embarrasses a man, who is hitting her husband in order to save her husband, the katsosa es kappa, which doesn't mean literally that we cut off her hand, chas v'shalom, but rather mammon, that she has to pay mammon of boshes, even though, again, she was motivated to do this and to be mevayish him by kicking him in a sensitive place because she wanted to save her husband. Why not apply the principle of Ovid Inish Dinil Anafshe, my love? Isn't the Braisa talking of a case be She'eni Yechol Latzil Al Yedei Darach? There was no other way of saving her husband from the hands of this makeh, of this assaulter. And nevertheless, she's not allowed to take the law into her hands and cause a boshes to the makeh. So we see here that even Mamakum Seda, we apply the principle of Ein Adam Oseh of it in Inish Dinil Anafshe. The Gemara says, "Lo, that's not the case of the Braisa. She yachola lahatzil ayidei dover. Ach, she could have found another alternative method of saving and protecting her husband. She didn't have to kick the guy and embarrass him. And therefore, everybody would agree that in this case, she had no right to embarrass him. And it's not called of it in Inish Dinil Anafshe. The Gemara says, "Aval eina yachola lahatzil ayidei dover ach ptura." What are we going to do with the Sefer if you're telling me that if she had no other way, no alternative method of saving her husband other than being Mavayish the Makeh, in such a case you want to tell me Ovid Inish Dinil Anafshe, she doesn't have to pay damages, doesn't have to pay boshes, the Braisa, the Sefer is looking for a case of Ptur, and it stretches its arm out to the case of Shliach Beis Din, Visholcha Yada Prat L'Shliach Beis Din. If the Shliach Beis Din embarrasses this person, he's potter, he doesn't have to pay boshes because he's doing so as an arm of Beis Din. Beis Din authorized him to do so. And it means that, according to you, if she had taken the law into her own hands and she had no other way of protecting her husband, she would be Ptura, as Liflog Vinis Nidido. Why did the Mishnah have to stretch its arm out in the safe to the case of Shliach Beis Din? Why not just simply stay within the confines of the Reisha, Bamedvar Mamurim? When in the Reisha does she have to pay Dmei Boshes? That's only Bishi Yechola Lahatzil Al Yidei Devarach Aval Eini Yechola Lahatzil Al Yidei Devarach Ptura.
is the Gemara says, Hochinami ka'omar. That's what the Braisa means. It's sort of like a chisuri mechzor, we have to add a middle clause to the Braisa. When does a woman have to pay to make boshes b'shiyacholatzli if she could have found another method? She didn't have to resort to this method. Avol eni yecholu lahatzil al yidei dover achernasi yoda kishliach bezinu ptura. In the case where she has no other alternative method to save her husband except by being mevayish the makeh, in such a case, her arm becomes like the arm of Bezdin. And just like in the case of Bezdin, the Mishnah, the Braisa says explicitly in the Sefer that the shliach Bezdin is fulfilling the will of Bezdin, and as such doesn't have to pay any damages of Boshe, so too she is kind of like the arm of Bezdin. Now the Gemara is going to quote a different Mishnah, a Mishnah in Bava Basra, to try to establish that lo ovid inish dina l'nafshi b'makom seida. Hare, the Mishnah says, shahoysa derech arabim overes b'toch sadehu. A person owns a field, and the Bnei Rishus Arabim that travel, they pass through the middle of his field. And they have established through their chazakah a permission to go through the field. Is netola v'nosan lahem b'natzad, the balas sode has the right to say to the Bnei Rishus Arabim, you know what? Instead of going this way, I'm going to give you a different alternative road to travel on the side of my sada. Why do you have to go through the middle of my sada and make it uncomfortable for me? Is Masha Nosan Nosan? What does this mean? That if he gives another alternative road to the Rishus HaRavim, that's given to the Rishus HaRavim. He can never take it back. Vishalo lo higia. And the old way, which now he wants to take back from the Bnei Rishus HaRavim, doesn't go back into his Rishus, lo yigir l'shuso. Even after he offers an irreversible offer of giving them an alternative route, nevertheless, the original old route remains in the chazakah of the Bnei Rishus HaRavim. They now have two roads to travel in, both trespassing, so to speak, through the sada of the Balas Sada. The Gemara thinks that according to the strict letter of the law, the Balas Sada has a right to make this swap because the Mishnah says Masha Nosan Nosan, which indicates that he's giving one road as an alternative to the other to replace the other. But since the people are used to going down the old way, therefore he cannot remove them from that road, and he cannot be tovea anyone in Bezdin for using that road, that way, that partway. Based on the premise of our understanding of the Mishnah, that according to the strict letter of the law, he has a right to make this switch. And if you're going to tell me that Ovid Inish Dinu L'Nafshe, he doesn't have to sue these people in Bezdin, why can't he take away the old derech from them, linkod pazur v'leisev, let him sit with a stick on the side of this pathway, of this road, and he should prevent anyone who wants to go through them from going through that road, because now it belongs to him, technically. And therefore, since he's suffering a loss by these Bnei Rishus HaRavim splitting and going right down the middle of his sadeh, then he should be allowed to take the law into his own hands and physically prevent them from using that old road. And yet, the Mishnah says shalo lo higia, which means a person is not allowed to take the law into his own hands, even though he's going to suffer a loss, and he cannot do this. That's no proof. Why? The Mishnah says that he's not allowed to switch the old road for the new road for a different reason. The worry here is that if we allow him to make this swap, he may give them some sort of a windy path, a longer path,
And then he's being mafsid, the Bnei Rishus Arabim, who had rights to use the straight path. So in order to avoid that situation, the Chachamim made a gzera, and they said that even if he would give them a straight path, he's not allowed to do so. He can't take away the old path from them. It's like a low pluk. The Gemara offers now a second answer, and there's going to be a third answer as well. Rav Misharshia Omar Benosin Lem Derech Akalosan. That in case, in fact, the Mishnah is talking about a case where he was offering them in this swap, in this deal, a Derech Akuma, a winding path, and therefore the Hachlofa is not Chal. Rav Ashi Omar Kol Minatzad Derech Akalosan Hu. The Bnei Rishus Rav are going to suffer because they have to go in the side. They want to go right down the middle. That's the direct path to get to the other side of the Sodom Rishus Rav. Is Krovel Azer Chokel Azer. The Gemara says that you might say that for certain people it's Krova, even though he gave them a derech on the side, it may shorten the path, but for other people, it's rechoka. Those people who live in close proximity to the old derech, and now you're being mafsed them by taking away that derech from them, you're robbing those, as the Bnei Rishus Rav, of their rights to go down the middle of the road. Ihachi, the Gemara says, and this is basically a cash on all three terutzim that we had, if the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Hachlof itself is not Chal, is Amai Shalolo Higia, Lemalahu Shkulu Didchu Vahavali Didi. Why does it say in an absolute way in the Mishnah that he's not allowed to take away their old derech, even though he offered them a tmurah, a payback, by offering them an alternative way? Shouldn't he be able to say to them, you take the old derech, but give me a derech hadasha, offer me some sort of compensation, so to speak, pacify me, and havali derech hadasha, shkulu didchu, but havali lididi derech hadasha. In other words, at least give me my rights back to this new alternative route and road that I offered you. Why is it irreversible? Once he gave them and offered them, he only did so as Achlofa. Well, you know what? If the Achlofa is not Chal, at least give him back that which he gave as a substitute, as an exchange. And the Gemara answers that the Baal HaSodah can no longer has rights to take back his Mishum de Rabbi Yehuda, Dom Rabbi Yehuda Meitzer Shech Ziku Bo Rabim Osur LeKalkalo. Once the Rabbim get used to a certain way, you're not allowed to take it back from them. And therefore, since the Bnei Rishus Rabbim in this particular scenario had already begun to use the Derech Hadasha, meaning those who are closer, he's not allowed, he doesn't have legal rights to take it back from them. That's the principle of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara now quotes another brisa to prove that lo avid inish dina lenafshoi, even b'makom say the Toshma, we learned in the brisa, balabayis sheiniach peah mitzad echad, if the balabayis left peah on one side of his field, ubo aniyim v'notlu mitzad acher, and the aniyim took peah from a different side of the field, is zevezeh peah. Whether they took it from this side or from that side, bein shenotlu, bein mashinichu, is it belongs to the aniyim. V'yamid inish dina lenafshei, amai zeveze peya. If a person has a right to take the law into his own hands, v'makom seder, why are both of them peya? Why do the aniyim have a right to take even that which the balabais gave them originally, since they took their pay from a different part of the Sada, they don't have rights to take now from the part of the Sada that the balabais designated for them, and therefore the balabais has a right, linkot pazer of a lesev, he should be able to sit over the aniyim on that side of the Sada, and anyone who wants to take pay from there, which is shalom kedin, he should prevent them from doing so. Because after all, he designated a different area. Why do they have a right to take from both corners of the field? Amar Rava, you misinterpreted the Braisa. The Braisa doesn't mean that both sides, both extremities of the field are Peah, but rather Rashoyu litol liatzmo, he can take back the balabayis, the balasode, that which he left mitchila, and enochinami on that part, which he designated for the niyam, he has a right to prevent the aniyam from taking them. Umay, and what does the brisa mean when it says zevezepeya? It means lefotram mina meiser. Once the balabais designated the northern side of his field, the northern corner of his field, is payah, even though now he has a right to take it back because the anim took payah from the southern side. Nevertheless, the northern side has a chaloshem payah, at least as far as a ptur meiser is concerned. Kedesanya, as we learned in a brisa, hamafkir eskarma v'hishkin baboker uvitzaro. If a person makes his kerem hefker, and hefker is potum in a meiser, and then he wakes up the next day and he starts harvesting his own vineyard, meaning that he was zoche himself in that which he made hefker, because he also has rights to reacquire hefker, is chayav beperet uba olos uba shivcha uba peya but upotum in a meiser. Even though now, by reacquiring this field, this vineyard, he's chayv in all matnas aniyim, whether it's peret, olo, shikha, peya, meaning that he was zocha bin a hefker, which normally would mean he's potim matnas aniyim, but in this case, he was zocha from that which was originally his. He was mafker, and then chazar v'shuv zochabo. He becomes chayv in all matnas aniyim, but he remains potim in a meiser. Once there's a chalos hefker on this field, it's irreversibly potim in a meiser. And the same thing applies in the case of peah. The bala soda designated the northern side as peah. He's potim from the meiser in an irreversible way, even though he has rights to reclaim that peah when the aniyim avail themselves of peah from the other side of the field. And now we begin the next Mishnah, which addresses the case of a person whose kelim were broken in Rishus HaRabim, and somebody else now was a victim by Niskal. He accidentally tripped on these kelim. Is the Mishnah says, Nishbar Akado Rishus HaRabim, if a person was carrying some sort of a jar of water, and he slipped and fell, and his jug broke, and now the water is spilled out. V'huchlak echad b'mayim, now someone was victimized because he slipped and tripped on the water. O shaloka b'charsis, or perhaps he hurt himself by scraping himself with one of the broken shards of this chavis, of this kad, is chayev. The owner of the kad has to pay. That's the opinion of the Tanakam. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'miskavin chayv, b'ne miskavin potter. If the owner of the kad had intention to lizkos, if the owner of the jar had intention to acquire ownership in the charsei kad, and in the waters, meaning he hopes to retrieve his loss after the breaking of the kad, and maybe put together the pieces like Humpty Dumpty. Then says Rabbi Yehuda, he's chayav. He has to pay tashlumei nezikin, because then it's considered mamono shehizik. But if he had no intention to gather up the broken pieces, he was mafkir, this bar, this takola, then he's potter mitashlumin. And this is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, that a person's not chayv for a takola that doesn't belong to him. So according to the Tanakama, you're chayv in this case, because according to Tanakama, it says that Huchlak echad b'mayim b'karak shalcha b'charsis chayev. The balakad has to pay tashlumi nezikin, according to Tanakama, despite the fact that he doesn't own the bar, because bar v'shusvarim is chayev even without ownership. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that he is only chayev if it's his own bar.
Yeah, go ahead.
So in explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, we have here a note that says the following. L'das Rabbi Yehuda, ha'niskal onusu b'shvir sakli. In other words, niskal is a person who trips and falls. That's called onus. That's, you know, there's no level of responsibility for tripping and falling. Ach ba'ofen shepash abazeh, if he should have been more careful, and it wasn't a niskal situation, but there was real negligence, then chayval anezek, he would be chayv, afim hifkir hacharosen. So there's no absolute principle, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you're always potter for hefker, if you're mafkir the takola, but it really depends upon how you created this bar. So if you have the combination of A plus B, A meaning you created the bar ba'onis, that's without any element of negligence, and B, you were mafkir this bar, this takola, then Rabbi Yehuda insists that you're potter. And this explanation is offered by the Bar Tanura on our Mishnah. But the Gemara later on is going to explain a different biur, is going to offer a different explanation for Rabbi Yehuda. And Niskaven Balakad means that he had Kavana L'Shovro. Now again, I don't understand why, you know, why he would have intention to break this kad. Aval im lonis kavin l'shovel niskal v'nofel potter, because according to review, the niskal is considered onus. So right now we're going to assume that kavana means, did he want to retain and reclaim his ownership on the broken pieces? Then he could be chayev. If on the other hand he was mafkir, if we combine the mafkir together with the fact that niskal is an onus, then Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter. The impression we get is that Tanakhama still insists that you're chayev, even in a case of eno miskav, which means he was mafkir it, but it doesn't matter. He was the one who created the bar, and that's all that counts. Again, we still haven't answered the other question. What happens if the other guy, the victim, tripped immediately and there wasn't even a moment of time for the creator of the bar to clean up the mess? That we don't know. Omrab Yudam Araf, let's see the sugya. Lo shonu, when do we say the balakad has to pay for nezikin, according to Tanakama? Elishetinfu kelov b'mayim. The person who came by, who I call him the victim, the damaged, he got his utensils, let's say his garments, completely filthy by contact with the water. And that's called Nizkei Kalim. And a bar is Chayef Kalim. Aval Hu Atzmo, but let's say the person, the victim, came along and he tripped, and he hurt his leg by smashing into the karka. So now we're looking on Chav Chesam and Beis. Potter. Then the balakad is not chayev. And why is that? So the Gemara says, karka olam hizikato. In other words, there was no direct damage caused by the mayim. It's just that he tripped over the water and then he hit his leg against the karka. That karka is not bar. That's karka olam. That karka was there and existed beforehand. So even though the reason he hit the karka is because of the mayim, that's already called grama v'nezik. That's indirect hezek. And therefore he's potter. So this is the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav.
Hi, how are you?
Now Rabbi Yehuda tells us, Ki amrisa kame de Shmuel. I told this din in the name of Rav in front of Shmuel. Amar li, Shmuel had a response. Michti, let's analyze this din. Avno v'sakinam aso mi boro lamadnu. If a person leaves a stone or a knife or his burden in a place where it could fall in Rishus Rabim, or he left it in Rishus Rabim, that's a case of bar. And yet, kulan v'kulan anikori bahen sharvelo adam chamar velo kelim. When the Torah says yechayef a bar, the Torah specifies that a shar fell into the bar, or a chamar fell into the bar, and we dash in
that shor is coming to the exclusion of a person, and chamor is coming to the exclusion of kalim. So it means that a person who created a bar is part of nizke adam, the kalim, that fell into the bar. And therefore, in the case of a person who comes smack up to an even, to avno sakino maso, he should be potter for paying for kalim. And now, if we go back to the original statement of Rav Yehud in the name of Rav, he said that tinfu kalev b'mayim, he does pay nezikin. Why not apply the principle of chamor v'lo kalev? Now, Rav, or let's say Shmuel, I should say, is going to qualify this. Hani mili, when do we say that the owner of a bar is part of kalim or finiske adam? That's l'inyan ketola. If a person dies as a result of the fall into the bar. Avalin in the zakin, if a person is damaged, he breaks a leg, chas v'sholem, is adam chayav, but kalim p'turim. Kalim in all cases are potter. Now, if this be the case, if Shmuel is saying that as far as kalim is concerned, there's an absolute p'tur in bar, then the Mishnah, when it says that you might be chayev or potter, has got to be talking about nizke adam. It cannot be discussing a case of nizke kalim. And yet Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav that the chiyuv of the balakad in our Mishnah is for nizke kalim, tinfu kalov b'mayim v'rav. Why does Rav say that if a person trips because of the kad, this broken, you know, this broken jug or barrel in the Rishus Rabim, and yet you chayev to pay damages for the kalim that were broken, is we're talking about a bar b'shus Rabim? So why should it be chayev for tinfa kalov? Is Hani Mili, Rav is going to say, Hecha Dafka Rinu. When do we say that a person is chayav for bar, and if the kalim were broken in the bar, he's potter because bar is potter and kalim, that's only Be'afka Rinu, because he was mafkir, the bar, Aval Hecha, the law of Karinu, Mamonahu. Mamonu means it's not bar. I guess it comes under a different mazik. We'll call it shar. And if that be the case, he's chayav for kalim. So it comes out, if I understand correctly, that according to Rav, when you're chayav for creating a bar in Shus HaRavim, that's only because you're mafkir that bar. It doesn't belong to you. And therefore bar comes under this new category. That's not any of the other mazikim, because all the other mazikim you have to own, it's your shor. Bar is hefker. And according to Rav, if you retain ownership over the bar, and you weren't mafkirit, hecha de lo afkirinu, and you still own it, it's mamono, then it doesn't come under the mazik of bar, but it comes under the mazik of shor. Shor is the eighth, you know, the prototype of momen mazik. And then afkamid is going to be whether you pay for this kalim. If not for Rav's statement, assuming that he retains ownership over the you know, the broken shards of this kli, he's going to take it to a potter and he's going to have it recollected, plastered. So we would assume he's chayav for bar and therefore he'd be potter for kalim. But now that Rav says that if he retains ownership over the bar, it's not bar, but rather shor, now we can justify why Shmuel quoted Rav as saying that he pays for kalim. And that's according to Rav, but Shmuel says that there would be no chiyuv for kalim, even though it's Avno Sakino Maso, even though he owns it, because it's not Mamana Mazik, it's Bar. Meaning that, according to Shmuel, any Takola Bershus Rabim, whether you own it or you don't own it, if you created, you set up that Takola, that's called Bar. And therefore, Avno Sakino Maso is called Bar. And therefore, in the case of Nitkal and HaMishnah, the Kad is called Bar. And you'd be part of Kalim. According to Rav, on the other hand, bar is only hefker. That's the basic, essential definition of bar. If it's not hefker, it's your mamon, then it comes under nizke shar, it's mamonu shehizik, and therefore you be chayef in nizke kelim. So according to Shmuel, if in our Mishnah you'd be chayef, it would only be chayef in nizke odom, and not in nizke kelim, because we're talking about bar. Even though he retains ownership, it still remains bar. It's a takola, and that's bar. According to Rav, on the other hand, since in our Mishnah, let's assume he retains ownership over the shivrei kelim, that's mafkiyat from a shame bar, and it comes on the shor, and therefore you could be chayev for nizke kelim. How's that sound so far? Any questions you want to... Which of these two shitas, like, intuitively makes more sense? Shmuel shita that any takola you created is bar, or Rav shita that bar has to be hefker? Now, what would be your, like, knee-jerk response?
Anything that so Shmuel's understanding is that anything that like was your property ever is still
bar,
still your responsibility,
even though you aren't mafker. No, this Shmuel doesn't accept Rav that it's antithetical to say you own the bar and it's still called bar. Now, Rav has this super principle here that if you own something, then it can't be bar. It has to fall into shor. It's almost like shor is the, you know, the massive all-inclusive mazik.
Right.
And in order to set up bar, you have to take it out of the category of shor. And you can only do that if you mafkir it. Mm-hmm. Shmuel, on the other hand, says no. Let's analyze bar in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And essentially, a bar is a bar. If it's takola, and it's in Rosh Hashanah, that makes it into a bar. Whether you own it or you don't own it, is irrelevant.
Okay. But obviously, for you to be chayev, you have to have owned it at some point.
I'm not sure about that.
Well,
because let's say, for example,
it?
A person comes into Rosh Hashanah and the Nifnasal Juk, and for some crazy reason, starts digging a bar in Rosh Hashanah. He never really owned that bar, and yet he'd be chayef for that bar according to everyone.
Right.
If a person, let's say, if I borrow your Avno Sakina Maso and I plop it down in the middle of Shusha Rabim, I should be chayef for bar, even though it was never mine.
Right, that's enough, Kamina, because it's a question of whether it's property or whether you cause it.
Right. So let's see the Gemara's Kasha now. Masiv Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia is going to quote a brisa. This brisa is based on the pasuk ki yiftach ish bar o ki yichre ish bar. In the end of that pasuk, it says v'nofal shama shar o chamar shar v'lo adam chamar v'lo kelim. Mikan amru nofal socho shar v'kelov. Let's say an animal falls into this bar and it's got utensils on it. Like, let's say you have an ox that has on it some sort of a yoke. Mm-hmm. Or some sort of a saddle or a harness or what's it called that you do the threshing with? I don't know what the
plow.
A plow, excellent. There's a plow that's located on the shoulders of this ox. Vinishtabru, and now these various utensils break. Mm-hmm. And you have another case of chamar v'kelov. Let's say, for example, you have a donkey, and it has on it a saddle, or it has bundles of clothing that's packaged, or whatever, this a beast of burden. And now it falls into a bar, viniskaru, and now the kelim are ripped into shreds. Is the brisa says, chayav, the one who dug the bar has to pay, ala behema, for the animal that got injured or died, upater ala kelim, and yet, it's part of a kelim because it says chamar v'lo kelim. So far, the price is okay. Now the Braisa continues. Holamazed Dome, this case of someone who digs a Baruch Sram, to what could it be compared? A man takes his objects, which are very sharp and dangerous, and he plops them down as a takol in the middle of Rishus HaRab, and he's going to be potter on Kalim. Now, let's understand that the first case of the Braisa, he dug a bar. In the second case, he places the takol in Rishus HaRab. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the Gemara says, Adarabba. Ma dome laze mi boile. The Braisa, instead of comparing these two cases, one is the chofer bar and the other is my niach takol v'shuram, the Braisa should have said, ma dome laze. The chofer bar is explicit in the Torah. The person who leaves the takola is not explicit in the Torah. So it's very strange that the Braisa says, lama dome de zome. I'm going to give you the paradigm case. It's Avnon Sakinim Aso. That's strange. The paradigm case, which is explicit in the Torah, is the person who digs a bar. So why does the Braisa say, I'll illustrate to you the basis for digging a bar, the chi of digging a bar, with the case of Avnon Sakinim Aso? It's like reverse of what the logic should be. Ella, but rather, my domil is there. What does the Braisa mean when it says, quote, it doesn't mean domalism, meaning that the first case is a subcategory derived from the second case. That makes no sense. But lefichach, what we really mean in the Sefer of the Braisa is not domalism, but lefichach. In other words, the intention of the Braisa is to derive, by analogy, the case of Meniach Takol from the case of Chofer Bar. Which means that just like a case of Chofer Bar is potter for Kalim, so too Meniach Takol is also potter for Kalim. Then the Braisa concludes by saying, Lefichach therefore, im hi tiach, tzlochiso bi even chayov. If a person leaves his stone down on the floor of Rishus HaRab, somebody else comes, and he's carrying some sort of a glass jar or whatever it might be, and he trips over this even, and as a result, this tsluchit, this glass jar, breaks and smashes from the event, is then chayav. The owner of the stone, who placed the stone of Shusram, has to pay damages for the tsluchit. And now the Gemara seems to contradict both Rav and Shmuel. This price, excuse me, contradicts both Rav and Shmuel. Why? The Reisha kasha l'Rav, and Sefer kasha l'Shmuel. The ratio of this braisa contradicts Shmuel, contradicts Rav. Why? Because if a person places a takolim rishus harabim, and the braisa equates this with chofer bar means your potter on kalim, why should this be so? If he wasn't mafkir his takola, he didn't make it hefker, according to Rav, it doesn't come on the bar, but it comes on the shore, and therefore he should be chayef for kalim. The sefer kashal Shmuel, why? Because if a person trips on this even and breaks his tzluchit, the owner of the even is chayv to pay damages for the breaking of this kli. It must be because he wasn't mafkir the tzluchit. And if he wasn't mafkir, he wasn't mafkir the even, the takola. And therefore he's not chayv mishum bar, because bar is potiv in his kelim, but rather mishum shar. That's against Shmuel, because Shmuel holds that once something is a bar, it's irrelevant whether you are mafkir it or not. Even if you retain the ownership on it, it still remains bar, and therefore you should be potter for kalim. So basically what the Gemara is pointing out is that this braisa doesn't work out mimarevshach, not according to Rav, nor according to Shmuel. The Reisha can't work out according to Rav, because since he was meniach, he placed something, a takola which is his, why should he be potter for kalim? And like the case of Chofer. And the Sefer is difficult according to Shmuel, because since he retained ownership over the bar, over this takola, Fendesvegen, nevertheless, it still remains bar, and he should be part of the Kalim. Why is he chai for the Tzluchit? The Gemara says, Ulatameich. And wait a second, leaving out Rav and Shmuel, you yourself, the Maksha, you understand this Braisa? Does it make sense to you? Tikshe lecha hi gufa. You yourself should posit an inner contradiction between the Reisha and the Sefer. because the Reisha says that you're part of an iske kelim when you put the takola down in Mishnas Rabbim. The sefer chayv. The sefer says you're chayv for the tzluchit. Ella, you're gonna have to reinterpret this brisa. How? Rav mitarts l'tamei, Ushmul mitarts l'tamei. Each one, Rav and Shmuel, respectively reinterpret this brisa. The Gemara explains. Rav mitarts l'tamei. Yes, it's clear from this brisa that a person puts down a takol which is a Rav, he's potter and iske kelim. But medvar mamurim, Rav is going to have to add a clause that only applies kishef kiran. After he placed this evan or sakin or masa on the floor of Rishus Rabbim, he said, I declare it hefker, and therefore it becomes bar, and it's potter on kelim. Avalo efkir, and if he retains ownership, chayav, he has to pay for niske kelim. Lefichach, therefore, hitiach, if a person leaves a stone in the Rishus Rabbim, and he maintains ownership over the stone, then someone comes along, he tiachs lichus of heaven, he smashes his kli against this stone, chayev, because it comes under shar, mamon amazik, that's chayev on kelim, because he wasn't mafkirit. That's the way Rav is going to interpret this price. Ushmul mitaritz letame, Shmuel is going to interpret this price in accordance with his view that a bar is a bar, whether he was mafkirit or not, and he's always part of kelim. Hashta di amrit. Now that the Brisa explains that Avna Sakinim Aso Kiboro Dami, which means that the person who lays down his stone or his knife or his burden in Rishus Rabbim, he's going to be potter for bar, which I think, according to Shmuel, means even though he retains ownership, it still is bar and he's potter for Kalim. Lirab Yehuda de Machayv al Niske Kalim Babar. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who disagrees with this drasha of Chamar v'lo Kalim. And that's a Gemara later on at Daf Nun Gimel, which we didn't get to, is Lafichach Itiach Tzolchisa B'Evin Chayav. In other words, this Braisa in the Seifa is reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that there is no Ptur of Kalim in Bar, and the Bala Bar has to be, is responsible to compensate the owner of the Kalim that was destroyed in the Bar. Reb Shmuel himself may maintain the halachas like the Chachamim that chamor v'lo kelim in a bar is part of a kelim, but nevertheless he has a right to interpret this particular brisa that says you have to pay for the tzluchis as reflecting the authorship of Reb Yehuda, who says that you chayv in a bar for kelim. Now the Gemara goes into detail about when and why the Baal HaEvan Sakin Umas has to pay for the loss of the tzluchis, lo shanu, that only applies elosh and niskal be even that the owner of the tzluchis smacked up against this even vinishaf be even, and the tzluchis somehow rubbed up, so to speak, against the even and broke. Avol niskal bekarka. If, let's say, the person holding on to the tzluchis trips over the even and smashes against the karka, then potur. Oh, v'nishof the even, and the even, what happened over here? I'm a little confused. Just one second. Niskal balakos the karka. Oh, I see what happened. What happened was the owner of the kli tripped on the karka. And what happened was, as a result of his tripping, he dropped the kli, and the kli smashed up against the evan. Pot, the owner of the evan in this case, is pot for paying damages for the destruction of the tzluchis. And why is that? Because the ultimate cause of this hezek, the goreim, was not really the evan per se, at least the original cause. The evan was the final cause. But the original cause was that he tripped on the karka of Rishus Rabbim. That's what really caused this whole takola. Kiman, whose shita does that reflect? The loke Rabbi Nosson, not like Rabbi Nosson on Daphnun Gimelam and Aleph. What's the case of Rabbi Nosson? You have a short tam
that pushes someone else's shor into someone's bar, and there you pay, the Baal HaShor pays one quarter of the nezek, the Baal HaBar plays three quarters of the nezek. The Baal HaShor pays one quarter because he's only chayev as a shor tam for chatzi nezek. The Baal HaBar should be chayev for the entire nezek because it was his bar and the shor fell into his bar. And in actuality, it was the bar that killed or injured the shor. So really, in effect, the Baal HaShor should pay the entire damage. But on the other hand, there's someone else here who should pay at least half the damages, and that's the Baal HaShor that pushed another shor into the bar. So when you have Mr. X who's chayev in the whole damage and Mr. Y is chayev in chatzi nezek, then what we do is we divide in such a way that X pays three quarters of the nezek and Y pays a quarter of the nezek. According to Rabbi Nosson, if a person trips on the karka, and as a result, the tzluchis drops out of his hand and smashes up against the evan, then the owner of the evan should pay the entire nezek. But since we cannot claim compensation from the owner of the karka, because the karka is Rishus HaRabim, and he also is part and parcel of creating this hezek, therefore, we understand that the owner of the evan should pay full nezek. But now, Rabbi Lozar rejects Rabbi Nosson, and he holds that since the karka was the gorem, you can't collect it all from the bala evan. In other words, when Rabbi Lozar says that the bala evan is patur, he's contradicting Rabbi Nosson, because Rabbi Nosson holds that if there were two causes, right, two garmim, then you can collect from both of them. And if one doesn't pay, the other one pays. That's Rabbi Nosson's shita. So they contribute both to the payment of compensation for damages. Rabbi Lozar, on the other hand, holds that even though the Baal Evan was also a Goreim, because had there been no Evan, the Tzluchas wouldn't have been broken, but since there was a Karka element here as a Goreim, therefore, says Rabbi Lozar, the Baal Evan doesn't pay a dime. He doesn't pay anything. That contradicts Rabbi Nosson. Ika Diamri, the Gemara offers another interpretation. Omar, Rabbi Lozar, lo tema b'niskal b'even v'nishof b'even hu d'mechayev. The case is not where he trips over. Rabbi Lozar is, this is a new formulation of Rabbi Lozar's statement. Don't interpret the case here as a case where a person tripped on the evan, and as a result, its tzluchas fell from his hands and smashed against the evan, hud machayev, and therefore you would derive from that aval niskal bekarka v'nisha bevan patur, implying that if he trips on the karka and then the kli falls out of his hand and smashes against the evan, he's patur, because that would contradict the principle of Rab Nosson, Elafilu Niskal Bekakav Nisha Bevin Chayav, the Baal Evan is Chayav, Kiman, Ki Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Nosson, who holds that if the Shor pushes another Shor into a bar, then the Baal HaShor Nizak, meaning the one whose Shor is now in the bottom of the pit, he has rights to collect damages from the Baal HaBar. And basically, the Baal HaBar should be chayv fundamentally for all the nezek. Again, he's only going to play three quarters because the Baal HaShor that pushed him is also going to pay chatzi nezek. Is you see, therefore, that the Baal HaBar is culpable, is liable to pay the full nezek, even though there was a gorem. In other words, there was the shor that pushed the shor into the bar. Here also, even though the Baal HaTzluchis slipped on the karka, but since the tzluch is smashed against the evan, which is the bar in this case, then you should be able to collect the nezek and the compensation from the bala bar. If you can't collect it from the bala karka, because there is no bala karka, it's Rishus HaRabim, then according to Rabbi Nosson's mechanics, you collect it from the bala bar, and that's indeed what Rabbi Lozar says. So there are two lashonos here as to whether Rabbi Lozar accepted Rabbi Nosson or rejected Rabbi Nosson. The first lashon in Rabbi Lozar rejects Rabbi Nosson. And in the case where he tripped on the karka and the tzluchis smashed against the
bar against the Eved Yepatu, against Rabbi Nosson. The second Mishnah says, no, don't say that if he tripped on the Eved and broke the Tzluchas on the Eved, he's Chai, but if he tripped on the Karka and he broke the Tzluchas on the Eved, he's Patu. No, even if he tripped on the Karka, and as a result, the Tzluchas smashed against the Eved, still, nevertheless, the Baal Eved is Chayev, and that reflects the Shita of Rabbi Nosson. Okay, then? So I think we'll call it a night, and we'll stop here. Is that okay?
All right, thank you.
Okay.